exposing that free trade is never free. The Rick Smith Show.
So on Monday night, you know, I go back to that, and the one thing, the blind squirrel finding the nut, you know, Trump did hit on the trade issue, which has been one of the centerpieces of his campaign. And, you know, look, I like the fact that he's talking about it. I just don't know that he's got an actual plan outside of the rhetoric that we heard. And when you try and drill down into the details, not much there. So here to talk a little bit about the idea of trade policy, someone who has spent his life working on this, I've asked Dr. Stephen Herzenberg. He's the executive director of the Keystone Research Center to come talk with us about this and how we can bring jobs back and what the policy should and would look like, even if the Donald doesn't know. Steve, thanks for taking time for us.
Happy to do it, Rick. Good to be here.
So, I mean, you know, the blind squirrel found the nut. Yeah, you know, we've been saying this for you know, probably two decades now, that our trade policies are harming jobs. Nothing new here.
Absolutely. I helped write a congressional study of NAFTA that was in 1992 that unfortunately didn't win the day, but which talked about building into NAFTA much more balanced trade in the auto sector, making sure that U.S. net exports would go up and jobs wouldn't be destroyed. But so maybe 25 years later, we can get it right under the next president.
So maybe we dust off that report and say maybe this is where we should have gone.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it is pretty simple on trade policy. Virtually every other country approaches trade policy from the perspective of how can I help my country's economy? How can I create more jobs, including high-paid jobs in my country? And we haven't approached it that way. We've approached it as how can I do the bidding of the biggest companies that want to protect their intellectual property, that want to protect their investment overseas. Too often, how many more U.S. jobs can I give away so that big companies can ship back to the U.S. market from overseas? So it's time for change. To some extent, the big companies themselves are having some of them are questioning the old approach because, for example, when it comes to China, they can't protect their intellectual property. So I think the stars are aligning for finally a real policy, trade policy to help U.S. The U.S. middle class.
So when you watched Monday night, what did you see between the two candidates? Because it seems like it's something that they both agree on.
It is going forward. You know, clearly the trade issue is one in which Trump is most comfortable and one where Clinton feels like the record of the Democratic Party and her husband on trade doesn't help her. But the fact is that I think she does get it now, and also the fact is that even though Trump's gut is sort of actually on target, I mean, that's, I guess, the blind squirrel, is it? Catching the nut was your analogy.
Right.
Question of whether he has a team that could actually follow that up in a coherent way, you know, is very, very much an open question. But again, the good news, I think, is that we really do have a chance. Whoever gets in, we got to keep pressure on them, and we should get a different trade policy going forward.
And that's the hope. But in looking at the policies as we know, because I got to be honest, I've checked Trump sites, I've looked for it. There doesn't seem to be any actual nuts and bolts and a roadmap on how we get there. So the question then becomes, how do we fix our trade policies? How would you go about moving us in the right direction?
I mean, some of it really is. You got to depart from the policies and the assumptions of the past. So we have a trade policy now, that a U.S. trade policy, that's premised on the idea that trade is good and what it's called, free trade, is good. And so then there are some exceptions and some protections whether it's in the World Trade Organization or U.S. trade law. So we have protections against dumping, which China does all the time in our steel industry and other industries. You have sometimes the ability to impose countervailing duties, you know, put a tariff, make that foreign good that's being sold in the U.S. below cost, make it more expensive and less less competitive, make it displace less U.S. jobs. But the problem really is that, those U.S. laws are take the idea that someone's dumping and cheating in terms of free trade as the exception. And what we need is a trade policy that's much more grounded in the realities of trade between, say, China and the U.S. So, again, in the steel industry, where there's a pretty simple story of in the Great Recession and after the Great Recession, the Chinese saw demand going down. Their growth rate was going down. They invested massively in infrastructure, including in the steel and concrete and glass plants they needed to build that infrastructure. But then they had those plants after that infrastructure boom happened, and now they've got too much capacity.
Right.
The Chinese national government actually has a plan for reducing capacity. They get that there's too much capacity, but each Chinese province almost acts like a European country within the European community. And so it has a nationalized or partly nationalized steel company. They don't want to reduce their capacity. So, again, basically, China has too much steel capacity because of the nature of their economy. We remain the market of last resort. They dump it in the U.S. for too low or below cost prices. So all of this is completely understandable when you understand their economy and how it works, and you understand our approach to trade. So they, again, the protections in existing law, anti-dumping, countervailing duty, are not strong enough. And again, we need a world trade system and a U.S. trade policy that are much more grounded in an understanding of how different economies interact, and start from a view that, yes, trade is good because we can get efficiencies and higher productivity and competition that rewards the best companies across the globe, but it's got to be balanced, it's got to be fair, it's got to be not based on who can pollute the planet the most, who can pay their workers the least and violate their rights the most. So it has got to be a pretty big departure. Clinton has the policy chops to do it. I think she gets that she has to do it. And we need to keep the pressure on it if she ends up as president to make sure that we get that change of direction.
I'm with you on that. But, but what I hear from my friends on the other side is what you're talking, Steve, is protectionism. You're closing off the doors and it's gonna kill us. We can't have that. Prices will go through the roof. It'll be horrible. We can't have protectionism.
Yeah, okay. But, it's empty rhetoric. I mean, so you got to find. So they still live in this la-la land where – the only choices are free trade and protectionism. And so their statements are basically empty and meaningless. You've got to, they would have to engage a real discussion of steel. What do you want to do about all this dumped steel? What do you want to do about these thousands more Pennsylvania steel jobs going away?
Well, I mean, what my capitalist friends would tell me is that's good. We get cheap steel. We could use it. We pay less for it. And those steel workers, they could just go find jobs somewhere else because get retrained.
Right. And that's just dead wrong. I mean, there's a lot of trade theory now. Some of it, there's a lot of trade theory now that isn't like the old story about the old story was, Portugal makes wine. England, makes wool and manufactured goods. And so if they trade, you get a more total amount of wine and more wool and manufactured goods. And, everyone's happy, right?
Right.
So, but that's not the world we live in. It's not the what is produced in different countries changes over time. And frankly, who does well in the future, whose living standards go up the most, depends on having the most innovative industry. So who's controlling the information technology industry, the software industry, the robotics industry, right? So what's going on is that China systematically, and again, as a development policy from their perspective, you can't blame them for this, but they are eating our lunch in progressively more sophisticated industries.
Right.
So again, I'm back to your friends on the right who talk about protectionism don't know the first thing about a modern economy and modern international trade.
Yeah, but you know, here's the thing, and you're right, they're eating our lunch and it's our fault, it's not theirs. And I agree with you on that. If I were them, I'd be doing the same thing. Because if you're willing to give away your manufacturing base, if you're willing to give your wealth away, I'm willing to take it. But the question then becomes, you know, how do we bring those jobs back? Do those jobs ever come back? Because if you listen to the Trump rhetoric, while again, it's devoid of details, it is a lot about narrative and tugging at the strings of we're going to make things the way they were. And all those people who lost jobs and lost their identities, they're going to all get that back. Is that possible? Will we be able to bring those jobs back?
We're not going to bring, manufacturing, you know, right around World War II was half of Pennsylvania jobs. It's now less than 1 in 11, less than 10% of Pennsylvania jobs. So can we get back 100,000 jobs in Pennsylvania manufacturing, move it from whatever it is now, 550,000 to 650,000? Maybe. Can we move it? You know, we have more than 6 million jobs now. Can we move it to 2 million? Not a chance. So we can increase the number of manufacturing jobs. Each manufacturing job, especially high-wage, capital-intensive manufacturing job, supports a bunch of other jobs, including in consumer industries. So it does matter. And again, the good news, and you and I were talking about this offline, is I was at a hearing this morning held by actually a bipartisan manufacturing caucus in the Pennsylvania legislature, and with a combination of voices from business and the Steel Valley Authority from Pittsburgh, which also has connections to labor and community folk, and talking about what's called reshoring. So since 2000, actually under President Obama, and in part because of the auto bailout, we've actually seen U.S. jobs in manufacturing and slightly Pennsylvania jobs in manufacturing grow again for the first time since, Bill Clinton was president, right? The first time since the second half of the 1990s, manufacturing jobs are going up now, not as fast as we'd like. But some of it is that companies are realizing the downside of offshoring, including to China. So they're realizing they don't want their intellectual property stolen. They don't want that kind of distance between their research and new product folks and manufacturing. They don't want that much inventory tied up in the shipping from China to here. Chinese currency has gone up some compared to, let's say, 2006. Wages have gone up some. So there's a whole reconsideration of the benefits of U.S. versus offshore production. So, again, there's a great opportunity. The new trade policy is not just about stopping the bleeding. It is partly about that. But it is also about a positive story, creating an environment in which U.S. companies have a chance again. Because, again, as a result of some of the other factors I just outlined, it's less of a foregone conclusion that offshore will outweigh reshored production going forward. So if we can really create a level playing field, then we can create a situation in which Pennsylvania manufacturing jobs will be growing again. A lot of those, not all of those, a lot of those will be in small and medium-sized companies. You know, they can be in robotics companies in the southwest Pennsylvania area. They can be in small manufacturers around Philadelphia. They can be small powdered metals companies in Elk County, which is part of the rural region in the north central part of Pennsylvania. That's kind of the twofer we need to be looking for. And again, when it comes to policy, trade may be, at least rhetorically, Trump's ace in the hole. But again, as a practical matter, I think Clinton more likely than him to actually do the about face there. But when it comes to the other parts of a trade, of a manufacturing agenda, you know, investing in the workforce and supporting those small next-generation innovative manufacturing companies, I think hands down, Clinton is much more likely to build on Obama's legacy, actually, in those areas and to create that next generation manufacturing.
Oh, no, not the Obama. Don't you know Obama's been a failure? Didn't you watch the speech? Didn't you watch the debate? Didn't you? Don't you watch Fox News? Obama's been horrible for trade and for jobs. The economy's terrible.
You know, it's funny. One of the things that we did back in 2010 is a look at a bunch of manufacturing numbers by presidential term, and basically show that manufacturing jobs do much better under Democratic presidents than Republican. If you go back to sort of all the way to World War II,
as does the economy.
Exactly. It's the economy. So that Democrats are much more supportive of keeping unemployment low, and Reagan had one good term for manufacturing jobs, which is his second term. But one reason that was so good was because his first term was so bad.
You're right.
So Obama's, if we did update those numbers, Obama, I'm fairly confident that Obama would be the actually right near the front of the queue in terms of growing manufacturing jobs most of the time.
Right.
We've been shrinking them for the last 65 years.
Well, the good thing is both candidates are talking about how we revive manufacturing, how we bring jobs back. Steve, I appreciate you taking a little time for us. Great talking with you.
Happy to. Take care, Rick.
Thanks so much. Steve Herzenberg, Executive Director of the Keystone Research Center. Check out their website. We've got a link at thericksmithshow.com. Just click on Steve's name. Quick break. Right back. But the powers of me are too great. So walk away from the rebel phase.